Accession number 17618, Thomas Atkinson, reel 4.
Mr. Atkinson, reel 4. We're talking about cleaning and keeping your equipment and your clothing and your boots and so forth clean.
Well, we had equipment, you know, a button thing, which you put behind your button. What do they call them things now?
And button strip or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, it's like a sort of brass thing. You push it, the button, and you clean the buttons with a brush. It was there to protect your uniform underneath. And you were issued with a little brush for doing this. I think we got Blanco issued. And
Blanco was for your webbing?
Yeah, but yeah.
What colour was it?
Well, you get a brown, you know, the khaki stuff, you know, which you used to do it with.
Keeping your boots clean, how was that done?
Well, you had to do them every night, and yeah, every time you went on parade, they had to be sparkling, polished up. And you used to use your toothbrush. You used to get a very, very good shine on them shoes. And one of the annoying parts about it was you got a lovely shine on it, and then comes the winter weather, and they tell you all boots should be done with dubbin. So all the spin polish went out the window on your shoes, and you had our dubbin that does to protect your shoes during the winter months. And then the order come up again, all shoes will be highly polished, and it's a hell of a job getting them highly polished when you've been using dubbin all the winter.
How did you keep your the seam of your trousers up to standard? Huh? You're living in tents.
Best you could, you used to really fold your trousers and put them under the blanket on the bed, you know. And I think we're more or less lying on the floor, really. I don't remember.
You didn't have palliasses?
I don't remember palliasses when we're under canvas, but you used to put a blanket down and you used to put your trousers under the blanket and blanket over the top, and that would help to press them to keep a your creases, right?
Were they strict upon the standard of your turnout?
Very, very strict, yes. Yeah, it got stricter as you went on, man, but they were very strict in them early days. And they did. We worked very, very hard during them first 6 months or so. Very hard. But but they did make us fit. We were fit.
How did you settle down to army discipline, which was something entirely different in your life?
Oh, I'm very adaptable, me. I wallowed in it. I thought it was great myself. I used to like the discipline of it. And very friendly people that you're with, and you know, meet your mates.
You say that the people were very friendly. Was there any bullying amongst the men?
Not really. I think the discipline was pretty good, and as I say, we're all put into different platoons for the first 2 or 3 months until they started sorting us out. And I eventually went into the medical side of it. Stretch your pants.
Before we come to that, you say there was no bullying that you recall. What about the NCOs? Were any of those imprinted on your mind as being the bullying type?
There's some you like better than others, but no complaints really about them, no.
Was there gambling in your leisure time, in your tents?
No. Oh,
I'm thinking of card games that would spring up.
Not in them early days, I don't think there was. But tell you what, they did used to have to anybody interested in boxing and things like that, and we used to do little spasms of boxing, and then we used to ask for anybody interested in cricket, and all them sort of things was I was interested in.
So you got involved in the sporting side?
I got involved in the sporting side, yes.
Is that important to the army?
Well, I think it's only part of the recreation, and also helps to keep you fit, doesn't it? And table tennis, all that sort of thing, you see. And it's all good sportsmanship, I think, that which they try to teach you in the army.
Obviously, the discipline would again was a change from what you've been used to. Did you consider it harsh at all?
I didn't think so, no. In fact, I enjoyed the marching and the drills and things like that. But there's quite a few people who didn't like it at all. But I personally, myself, I didn't mind it. We got to where, well, it was when we'd moved further on, you know, marching down the main streets and things like that at the Durham Light Infantry. 160 to the minute, was it? And the population used to think it was very funny. They'd been used to much slower marching than that, you know. You kind of blah, 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 blah.
Did they teach you something of the regimental history whilst you were in those early learning training days?
No. No, not in the early days. They taught us nothing like that. All they were interested in is getting you fit and being able to drill and take notice of a command. I mean, to realise that if you got a command, you had to keep to it. You couldn't argue with it. No argument, whatever. That's what the initial training was all about. And we've gradually made into soldiers.
I didn't ask you whilst we were talking about the drill. Did you have gas precaution training?
We did have it, but I think that was a little bit later than in the early days, when they put you through the into the hut with gas in. You had to go through and come out the other side, and the smell, different smells of the gases. Yeah, and we'd done all that. But that might have been after we moved from Froxton Road. We went from Froxton Road, Edinburgh, to Dunfermline. And
before we do that move, I think you said that you, at this point you weren't doing any duties. There were no guards or anything like that.
I don't remember doing guards in them days, no. Somebody must have been doing them, though. But I don't remember doing a guard in them first few weeks at Froxton Road. No.
Who was commanding the battalion at this point?
Were they called Seabag Montague or something, they called him?
Montefiore,
yeah. He was our commander at that time. And
did you see much of him?
Very little. And then we were taken over by Lieutenant Colonel Ware.
But he was there for this initial training phase.
Yeah.
You've mentioned the ablutions. Were you washing in cold water? Was there any hot water on for you?
There were cold water, but they had hot water showers, which you could use once a week.
Were you shaving when you went into the army?
Yes.
We didn't have that problem of having to shave, although you weren't shaving.
Well, I think I was shaving in cold water, if I remember rightly.
The toilets, then, for where were they in relation to your tent?
probably never used them. I can't remember. So there'd probably be across the field there, and there wouldn't be proper flush toilets. I think there were chemical toilets which you used in some days, yeah.
Army discipline, Mr. Atkinson, how did you take to it?
I just kept my nose clean.
I
had no problems with discipline, because I always believed in, if you can't win, join them.
There'd obviously be men, of course, who would...
Or rebel against anything, yeah. You see. You get the type that would rebel. But if they had any common sense, they would come to the conclusion that they're wasting their time with the army. It's far too big for you. Just join them.
What kind of punishments might be given out to a soldier that misdemeaned?
Well, these two lads that I was telling you about, that the one that pinched my first week's wages, they were brought up for absconding, weren't they? And they got 28 days in the glasshouse. And when they come out of the glasshouse, this Alan, they made him a Lance Corporal. It was no good because they were wasting the time with him. But I think he'd done army training or something prior to, well, I don't know, being the territorials or something. But they made him a Lance Corporal, which was a big mistake because he was useless. And most of the, it was small problems. You went before the company commander and he could dish you out with 7 days CB or 14 days CB. And when you're on CB, you was left to the sergeant in charge, where he put you in the coop house and that sort of thing. Peeling spoons, sackfuls of them.
You didn't see any of the ridiculous punishments that we would see? Polishing things, painting things, cutting things?
No, not in them days, no.
The camp discipline would be in the hands of the regimental police, was it?
Well, you had your regimental police there, yes. They were there and making sure that you didn't come in over the wall late at night and that sort of thing. And there was great discipline about your dress. You had to be dressed properly, especially when you're going out into the town and having your forage cap in the right place and everything spick and span. They didn't want any slovenry soldiers walking around Edinburgh.
You said you were looking forward to the excitement of the of what a military operation might be.
Yeah.
Was that prevalent throughout the unit? Were all the men in a similar happy or anxious anxiety state to get into action and wanted to get there quickly?
I wouldn't have thought so, no. Especially the family men, like the 29ers that had joined up, and their only ambition was to get on leave and get home and get the whole thing over and done with, you see. But I think you're young and daft when you're in about the 20s. You've got more sort of looking for more excitement. I think you get over that by the time you're 30.
Was mail coming through to you all right?
Yes, and we got leave after 3 months. Yeah. Getting our mail and everything, yes. Perfectly all right. I had no grumbles.
And what was the family reception like when you went on your first leave in your uniform?
Well, you know, when you went home on your first leave in them days, you got to take every damn stick with you. The lot. Kit bag, rifles. I know my first day of getting up home. We'd only moved into this house before I joined up, and I hardly knew where it was. And the first thing I can remember is trying to cross over this garden and tripping over when we rifle everything on top of me. But what happened was that there'd been some bombing before we got called up, and my sister, she was married, and my brother, he was married, and my mother and father and our family all moved into this big house, and all had, it was a really big house, it was rented, and they all lived together. I think they wanted to be together on account of the bombing, and especially the fact that the menfolk were going to go away. So I went in the July, and my older brother, he went up about November or December, I think. And he was sent to Malta very soon. He spent all his wartime days in Malta when it was under siege. He was in the Gunners.
How much leave did you get, the first leave?
Every 3 months.
And how much would you get, how actual leave itself, how many
about
days?
10 days. That was, it's like 7 days leave plus the weekends, which you, so it was about 10 days, I think, you got. And, you know, for years, the only dates I could remember was the dates I went on leave.
Was your mail censored at this point?
No.
Did your parents send you parcels to eke out the whatever the army were giving you?
Yeah, my mother did, yeah. She used to send me parcels and a postal order to help you out with your doings, yeah. We look forward to that because, I mean, the army pay, what you got was pretty useless for us, especially when you were smoking as well.
You moved from there, you said, to Dunfermline, was it?
Yeah, the battalion moved to Dunfermline.
Have you any
yes.
idea what date that was?
Oh, we don't know. Oh, I think it was round about the December of that year. It was winter time, but I remember the route marches in Dunfermline where you were sliding all over the place in them boots. I think it was somewhere around about the December we went to Dunfermline, and but we were under... indoors, you know, weren't under canvas anymore. Probably that's why we moved, to get out of the canvas, being under canvas.
Where were you billeted in Dunfermline?
The battalion was spread all over the place in Dunfermline, and, well, we were in, like, shop premises, empty shops or something like that. And we'd done a lot of training in... there's this big park in Dunfermline, and we've done a lot of training around that park. Beautiful park. Carnegie Park, they called it. Of course, that's where Carnegie come from. And we've done a lot of training there. Weapon training, more than anything, you know. And I think that was the first time we started going on the range.
What weapons were you introduced to? You obviously had the rifle. Had you got the 303s yet?
We got the rifles, which was the, well, that was the Canadian one, I think it was 303, same as the Enfield. I think we got the Enfields very soon after going to Dunfermline, which was 303. And then they had a, what you call an anti-tank rifle.
The boys were?
Which was about 5.5, and they knocked you on your back, and it was useless. It might have been all right against a Bren carrier or something like that. Well, I don't know, I reckoned it a great deal. And we had a fire just the same, but...
What other weapons did you have?
Well, we done the Mills bomb, you know, the Mills doing, we used to...
What form did the training take for learning to deal or throw a Mills bomb?
Well, I mean, you had your classroom training and how to dismantle it and how to prime it and all that. And then eventually they take you to an open place where the firing range, and you're in a trench, and then you've got to throw your bomb out, like, you know. If you played cricket, you were all right, but some of these blokes didn't notice.
This was just the overarm throw.
Well, you still have to have the overarm throw like that, yeah, with the Mills bomb.
How do you prime a Mills bomb?
Well, there's like a sort of catch on it. You put your primer in, and just like a little pellet sort of thing, put in, and you brought the dunes down, and there was a clip on which was held it, Now, when you were firing it, you took the clip out, and the only thing that held the lever down was your hand. And they were primed to several seconds, you know. So it'll give you several seconds to get your head down. And you threw it out where I was going, tried to hit a target. And you soon got confidence of being able to hold the thing without worrying about it going off in your hands, you know.
Was it an effective weapon, the grenade?
I would say so, yeah, I would say so, in close fighting, you know. But you didn't get the amount of close fighting which they were expecting. They were trying to base far too much on the 1480 war. And I think they made a mistake there, because the difference in the warfare was entirely different.
Bayonet training, did that come into your drills?
What training?
Bayonet.
Oh, yes, yes, you had to do bayonet training, yes. Yeah.
How did that go?
Well, the usual thing, you used to have a dummy set up and you used to hold your fixed bayonets, hold it, and then tell you to charge. You went charging and you had to push it in and pull it out, and if it didn't come out, you had to use your foot.
Put your foot up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And was this accompanied by wild screams and blood-curdling yells?
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Shout as you go went, yeah.
Which they made you do?
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm, yeah.
What other weapons did you have? Bren gun?
Well, we had the Bren gun, yeah. And you soon became an expert at putting the Bren to carry. You could put it together in a few seconds, you know, dismantled and all in pieces. And you had to put it all together, and used to do that pretty slick. And then, of course, as I was telling you about you could put it on a tripod. And I think that was for what you call fixed line. You know what fixed lines were, do you? In the dark, suppose you had a bridge, which we did have in Sagunian, and that is under surveillance from the enemy all during daylight days, you see. But what they used to do is set up fixed lines during the day, and if there was any movement on that bridge, you could fire and be on the target where you intended to be in the dark, you see. That's what they used to do with the fixed lines. But nowadays they've got ultra red sights and all sorts now.
Was it a good weapon, the Bren gun?
I think it was a very good weapon, but one of the complaints that about it was too accurate. It grouped too closely, didn't spread around too much. But it was a very versatile weapon, and a weapon that nothing could go wrong with it much, you know. I think that was the great thing about it. It was so simple.
It didn't have any serious faults?
No, no. No.
Were you introduced to mortars?
Oh, yeah, 2-inch mortars, yeah. We had a mortar platoon, you see, but we all went through mortar training, and we had one or two accidents with mortars. I always remember them setting up a mortar under a tree, you know, under a tree, and it coming down and bouncing down and killing a couple of blokes. And they brought out another Bakelite Mills bomb type, but it was more of a, it didn't shatter and send shrapnel around like Mills bomb, but it was, made a hell of a noise, and they brought it on. And remember the first time we had used it in training, they threw this bomb out, and of course it didn't go off. Now, what happens to a bomb that doesn't go off? We had a young lieutenant, well, he might have been more than a lieutenant, he might have been a captain. And I was in the stretcher bearers at this time, and he went across to his bomb and kicked it. And of course, it went off and blew his foot off, didn't it? Now, I've often wondered about the sense of that, because he kicks it and it goes off, it blows your foot off. If you kick it and nothing happens, you've learnt nothing. And it seemed to me, what a stupid thing to do at that time. I mean, any sensible person would have thought of something like a long pole or something, you know. What had happened was it was a brand new bomb, and they primed it wrongly. I think they put the primer in upside down, and as soon as it got this movement of a kick, it went off. And I remember his foot at that time. I thought, what a stupid thing to do. I was only a poor private soldier, and he was an officer, you know.
Did you, when you say you were introduced to mortars and you learned to fire them, was this essentially the 2-inch mortar or the 3-inch mortar?
2-inch mortars we had in the infantry.
Yeah. Is that a platoon weapon?
I think a 3-inch come out later on under the mortar platoon, a special platoon for. Yeah, but the infantry was each platoon was issued with a 2-inch mortar, and we had to know how to use it. So they trained us to do all that.
Was there any specialist training now coming into your work? I think in terms of signals and
transport, yes.
What have you?
Well, I mean, very soon I was transferred to the medical side.
Was that by choice or just picked you out?
Picked you out, stretcher bearer. I was picked out as a stretcher bearer. And we went to this place outside of Edinburgh. Bonnyrigg, that's where they set it up, in a church called Bonnyrigg. And from then on, I was a stretcher bearer all through my army career. And I went on courses for chiropody, and I became the regimental chiropodist when I went. But when I went into action, I reverted to being a stretcher bearer.
Can you take me through the training to become a stretcher bearer? You've been selected, you've gone to this place. What did they do with you?
Well, I think they appointed someone that had been in St. John's Ambulance and done that, and they soon made him a sergeant. They made this chap a sergeant. And then there was another one called Sykes, and he became a corporal, and he was in charge of us as well, you see. So we had a corporal and a sergeant, and they taught us all the St. John's manual of first aid, you know, all the different splints they used and that sort of thing. And it's all right if you were interested in the medical side, but I wasn't particularly interested, but that's where they put me. So I had to get interested in it, didn't I?
So as well as carrying a patient, a wounded man, in and out or away from an action situation, you had to have first aid knowledge.
Oh, yes.
What, up to what level of wounds or injury were you allowed to work on a man before you had to hand him over to someone else?
Well, I mean, your job as a stretcher bearer was really to stop any bleeding, if possible, by packing the wound and then taking him back to the first aid as quickly as you could so a doctor could get to him, you see. That was the training you got. I mean, but we did get training in putting on the Thomas splint, you know, for the femur, your femur breaking, you know, and all that. And we used to have competitions between battalions and that for first aid. We were pretty efficient, actually. And then I went on a course for chiropody.
What does a stretcher bearer carry with them into an action situation? What have you actually got to help the wounded on your person?
Field dressings. That's all you had, field dressings.
And have they medicated these field dressings?
Oh, yes, they sort of, you had to open them up, and they were. And my first field dressing I put on a dead man. I was Palomine, we were in the front line.
Can we leave that story until we get there? at the moment I'm particularly interested in the training that you've got.